All right, man. What's up? Everybody back. Another week. And I don't know, man. I just been on an easy slide, but I don't think it's been easy. I'm still getting used to this microphone thing here. Because when I'm talking, I know it's recording because I've done probably 15 sound checks and tested it. But when I'm talking, you know, and I'm listening to myself through the earphones, it keeps cutting in and out. But when I do the replay, it just sounds perfectly normal, you know. But anyways, I don't know, just random shit maybe today because I've been a little scattered. I don't think scattered in a bad way, but just in a good way, you know. I've been working out harder, which is interesting because if I sit there and look objectively, am I working out hard? Am I working out a lot of volume? And it's like, I don't know, man. More than I have been in the last couple weeks, but not as much as I have in the past. And so it's weird. Like, my body feels tired. I'm feeling fatigued, but I'm feeling good too, right? Like, it's a good kind of fatigue. It's not excessive pain or soreness. But you still feel it, and then you get the high from it too, right? Like, so it's kind of neat, like this intensity that I'm at. And I know I got to ramp it up a little bit more. Got some stuff going on, but I did a 70-mile ruck for 3.5 miles the other day, just walking with the puppies at the reservoir. And I was like, oh, this ain't a big deal. And about a half a mile before we got back to the truck, I was just like, man, my ass cheeks. Feeling it, man. Wow. And then we went back home and then relaxed for the day. Did another workout that evening, my rowing session. And the next morning I was like, holy shit, I am fatigued. And it's it's interesting. At the base level, it's interesting because, like, okay, hey, cool, I must have done something. Didn't seem like much, but I'm doing something. It must have been potent for a certain reason. And not excessively debilitating or anything, but just, it's encouraging to know, like, okay, it wasn't an hour of time wasted, right? And then, but thinking at it at a different level, it's like, why is it? Why did something so simple and easy feel like it was so effective? And it's because it's not the norm. It's not what I normally do. It's not moving a barbell or trying to do pull-ups, which my pull-ups are horrific right now. And I started thinking about that. It's like, okay, cool, like, doing these weird things is having this effect on my body, a fatiguing effect, which I know is building it, right? It's an effective way to get man, am I babbling today or what? Like a response or an impulse or an improvement or, you know, an adaptation, right? And so, where was I as I was just trying to struggle for that word adaptation? What the heck's going on here? And then I started thinking, okay, cool. Like, it was just a walk with a lot of load. You know, it wasn't a barbell or a pull-up. Man, there's value there. There's a tremendous amount of value. And I know people tell that to you all the time. Like, doing the things that you don't normally do has the greatest potential to give you value. Like, we've all heard it, right? And we believe it. It makes sense to us. You buy into it. But we, for some reason, just this last week and doing some of these weird things, it's really resonating deeply with me. And like, I'm feeling it. Like, and it's just like, yeah, and it's exciting. It's like, do something different. Just keep doing something different. Just keep tasking and challenging yourself. And then obviously the way my mind works is I'm looking at that on the physical spectrum. But then I'm taking that and trying to leverage it into other areas of my life, you know. Just broaden your scope. And what does that mean? Like, go to a different restaurant, go to a play instead of going to a movie, or read a different kind of book, or whatever it is. But just keep putting your body under different types of tension, your mind under different types of tension, your spirit, your perspective, your relationships, your intellect, whatever it is. I just keep putting under different types of tension. And be surprised at what that adaptation does back to the area of your main interest. You know, working with this guy who's helping us, our team, our rowing team, is working with a guy, Gus Barton, out of the UK. And he did a video assessment, and he's looking at us, and he's a pretty decent, I think he's pretty well known. He's accomplished in terms of personal training for people to ocean row and increase capacity performance. I don't know what caliber, but his athletes are largely successful, at least I hear. And I was pretty, I gotta clear this thing, man. Hang on a second. Oh, sorry for that. At least I gave you notice, right? And he did some movement assessment, and he's like, yeah, you know, I've always like, oh, I got tight hamstrings and this and that. And it's like, yeah, hey, and he's telling me, you don't really have tight hamstrings. You've got plenty of range of motion in your hamstrings. Maybe your hamstrings could be a little stronger, or we can develop them, the strength through the entire range of motion. But really, it's your hip flexors that are tight, and you don't have a lot of range of motion in your hips. And I was like, wow, really? Like, that don't make any sense. It didn't to me, you know, but it does. It did make sense, but it didn't really connect. And so he's been having me do all of these weird one-legged Romanian deadlifts with the barbell attached to the landmine and dead bugs and hovering birds and side planks and one-legged windmill, all this weird shit. And it's not exciting for me. It's boring. I go out to the garage on my own because Nicole's not doing this, so I'm doing it by myself with a dog watching me. And I put a little, you know, Tash Sultana on and just mellow through my moves and do my primers and my mobility and my strength and my capacity little things. And it's boring. It's not exciting. And I'm like, this is bullshit. My loads are super light, you know. And but yet I struggling with a little bit of balance. And I've been doing it for 3 weeks now, and I'm starting to see the benefits, which is exciting for me. You know, I pushed the I Believe button. Went on a Power Monkey podcast yesterday, talked about the I Believe button. And here I am. I think what I'm doing is reflecting my own conversation back from them into my own world for my own podcast. But yeah, I go in, I'm soliciting an elite coach, not to have him reinforce what I already know or think I know, but to trust the process and submit or yield to his intelligence, his wherewithal, his professionalism, his expertise, because that's why I went to him, right? Or we went to him. And just do it. Trust the process. Push the I Believe button. And I wake up this morning and I'm just like, man, I didn't feel like that 50 minutes of rolling around like an idiot on my gym floor, garage floor, was that effective. But then I wake up this morning and I feel a different kind of body fatigue. And in a good way, too. Like, wake up feeling sore but excited to meet the day with this, like, it's not even aches and pains. It's just a general. And I'm like, wow, that's cool. We were talking about it at dinner last night, Nicole and I. And it's like, yeah, you're just exercising muscles that you don't normally exercise. And you're using them in unique ways that if you did, do you normally exercise them, but you're in different movement patterns or different planes of motion or whatever that you don't normally use. I'm like, yeah, I know all that. Yeah, like, duh. But for some reason, it just really hit me in a profound way recently in the last couple of days. And it's exciting, you know? And I'm just wondering where I can do that in the rest of my life too, you know? When I took up archery, when I took up shooting the bow, and Dudley got me all dialed in there and built this excitement for me, that's what it was doing too. It was stretching things. It was providing challenge in a different dimension. And I think it had great benefit in other areas of my life that maybe I could directly correlate or draw a line to, but then also in so many indirect ways that I could never have imagined or created, right, or contrived. So I think there's something powerful there, something I'm trying to communicate to everybody. I'm reinforcing it for myself because I've got to go do some bullshit exercise this afternoon. Man, I'm looking at my programming, and not looking forward to it, you know, because it doesn't on paper. But I just, and I catch myself too, like, oh, I'm only going to do 10 reps, fuck doing 12, or I'm just going to skip, I'm only going to go through this one set. And it's like, no, Tosh, like, you're, you know, in for an ounce, in for a pound, you know, just do it. Just, like, what else are you going to do? You're going to go sit on the chair and scroll through Instagram? You know what I mean? You're going to sit in front of your computer and look for work to do? So, I'm talking about that a little bit today. I'm just really reflecting on that in the last few days. I'm excited, though. You know, Rose taking shape. I'm not turning this into an advertisement or a request for anything, but, you know, we're still trying to get our sponsors and partnerships organized, and we got a bunch of money to raise, but looks like we've got a training trip in Florida we have to go to for 5-6 days. I'm looking forward to that. We'll meet our boat there potentially and get on the water and start rowing. I want to see. I think today is just random thoughts that have been flowing in and out and in and out. You know, weather. I hadn't seen the sun for 8 days, I think. We got so much snow. You know, we got over 12 inches on a dump. And then we had 2 days of gloom, cold weather. Peekaboo sun, maybe. And then we got another 8 inches. Yesterday we had really... yesterday and then last... Saturday... We had sun breakthrough, and it was just like, you notice your mood just magnificently enhances. Blue sky, sun, some puffy clouds, you know, just beautiful out. I put a little tiny video in my Instagram story yesterday, went out, right? And it didn't do it justice. Like when I look, you know, across our property 360 and just look at the mountains and the snow and the blue sky and the birds are coming to life, and it's just, it feels the dripping of the melting snow through, like, is my soul just filled back up. You know, the power of the outdoors, the power of nature, get outside. Because I was feeling a little gloomy. And it's rare for us to go like 8 days without sun in Colorado, which is a huge attraction for Colorado. But then we're right back. Last night we got like another inch. We're supposed to get another 6 inches tonight through tomorrow. We're supposed to get our septic done tomorrow and front gates going in, so all the construction's moving back. But anyways, just the weather, it's interesting how that has such an effect on our mood. And for me, that's a, when I'm feeling weird, I want to check into that signal input and understand my mood a little differently because of maybe some external thing, not pointing at the external thing as an excuse, but like using it to help me identify my situation. Like, oh, wow, like, yeah, this may be, there's nothing wrong with me. This is why I'm feeling this way, you know, the weather. And then choosing to accept it or not is a different conversation. You know, if you choose to accept it, then you just wallow. But if you choose not to accept it, you find something else to offset that, right? Whether it's activity or reading or something enjoyable, music, the music you select or something. But that's a really good example of my process when I'm feeling a certain way. You look at what external factors are influencing you. You scan your internal factors, and then you choose to accept it or not. If you choose to accept it, then okay. At least you're making that decision. If you choose not to accept it, cool. Then what are you going to do to offset it? You know, and it doesn't have to be a one-for-one offset. It just, I could be feeling 70% gloomy, so I'm going to do something, and now I'm only feeling 40% gloomy. That's a win, you know. So, but yeah, this weather. I'm glad though, because we need the water, we need the moisture. Super, super dry. You know, Colorado got torched last year. The area we live in is ready to get torched. You know, big government keeps coming up here to tell me that I have to put my burn piles out because I didn't fill out a permit and whatever, and it's like, I'm on my own private property, I'm a landowner trying to take care of my own survival, but the government's going to tell me I can't do that, yet they don't come up here to help with the problem. You know, they should be paying me to help take care of the problem so they don't have to do it. But I'm not going to get political about big government. What else I got going on? Hey, massive shout out to my daughter, Chloe. She's turning 13 today. 13 years old. Man, I miss her. I miss her a lot. Going through some things, some developmental things. It's frustrating. You just hope, you know, on the backside that she's going to be awesome and great. She is just, yeah, happy birthday, Chloe. Really stoked for you. I can't even imagine the stresses and the just the dynamics of the world today that you have to navigate. I mean, you don't know any better because you just grow up in it, but, man, I have experience of an opportunity for reflection on what my childhood was and what I had to deal with. I can only imagine, like, you don't have to deal with some of that stuff, but you do have to deal with all this other new stuff that I'm dealing with now that's new and foreign to me that I struggle with, you know? But I can't even imagine that developmental age for a 13-year-old. I want to, super sad story, Luis, was shot and killed this past weekend, yesterday, 2 days ago now. He was a young adult. I came across him when I started working for Steve's Club a little bit here and there, and really, really liked this young man. And, you know, we got him to a CrossFit level one, and he was doing things and had a lot of ambitions. He was growing out of a tough spot, you know, inner city, underrepresented, under-resourced youth. And I don't know the details, but pretty sad. Pretty sad to hear, you know, about that. I think about it, too, because I don't know the details, and my mind goes in different ways, right? Like, okay, uncontrollables and controllables. Uncontrollables, you know, you're a product of the environment that you're brought up in. You haven't reached an age where you're totally independent and you can choose. And a lot of people, even though they do grow up to be independent and have an option for choice, they can't also get out of the environment that they're in, right? Like, oh, and it's easy for me to say, oh, yes, you can choose your environment, but not really. There's a lot of things that potentially are influencing you not to change your environment. It could be finances, it could be comfort, it could be capability, it could be love or loyalty to family situation or obligation, responsibility. There's so many things that it's easy for us to say, oh, well, just choose your environment. And so it's like, okay, man. And then I think about, you know, that inner city, that Hispanic gang type bullshit. What did he get caught up in? You know, I do know this, like, you control what you can control given the circumstances that you can't. You always can control something. And unless it was just some random act of violence that just happened, right? Like, which happens. So, yeah, the decisions that you're making every day that put you in higher risk or increased jeopardy or whatever that you could possibly influence, you know, running with the right crowd, choosing your friends, choosing your activities. And, you know, I have no information on what went down there, but my head's just spinning in different ways. Like, how could I have helped? How could I have made a difference? How could I have influenced? What went wrong? You know? And it's just sad, man. Just sad. But, and then, yeah, okay, right? Like, then you think about your own kids. It happens to somebody that's close to you, somebody else's kids, and you're saddened. And then at the same time, and this isn't going to sound cool out loud, I guess, but it's reality, and I think I can be forgiven for thinking it, but it's just like, yeah, I'm glad it didn't happen to my kids. I'm just glad it didn't happen to me. And I know that that's selfish, and I know that, I mean, that's where my head goes, and it's okay to let it go there when I correct it, right? It's okay to give it its place. It's not... Man, I just think about this, and I can walk around and feel sad and feel sorry, but then I can also use it as a lesson. What am I doing? How am I influencing my kids? That's called being an adult, taking ownership, having responsibility, right? Like, instead of just seeing things and walking around in judgment of the world, internalizing it and reflecting and then seeing what you can control to affect your little piece of the pie. But it's wild. it's wild. You know, and then I started thinking about, like, gun control and gun violence and this and that, and I have my opinions, right? And I have my opinions around, like, bad things happen to bad people. This is separate from Luis, right? Luis is a great human being. But, like, yeah, hey, like, don't do crime and you're not going to have to deal with fucking criminals or being held accountable by authority, right? Like, just be a good person. Like, don't choose those things. And I know that that's simple. And I know that that's myopic from my own beliefs and systems, processes, position, lot, fortune, whatever. But, like, I mean, you have the ability to at least control or influence the probability that something weird's going to happen by choosing not to put yourself in certain situations, right? So if I know a riot's happening or BLM protest or whatever that bullshit is happening down on Broadway and, you know, Canyon in Boulder, I'm going to choose a different route because I'm not going to put myself in the position to have to deal with that, you know? Or if I know that people around me are doing things that are wrong or potentially detrimental, I'm going to choose not to be around them. Maybe nothing happens this time, but, like, eventually, you know, you start dealing with probability, sevens are going to come up on that set of dice, you know what I mean? So anybody that don't know what I mean by sevens, like, that's craps, right? You roll a seven, crap out. So, I just think about that, and it's a function of maturity and wisdom, but every day I'm choosing to put myself into situations and positions where I reduce the opportunity for misfortune to happen. I have the luxury to be able to choose things that other people don't have that luxury to, right? So this isn't a judgmental conversation. This is just me reinforcing for me to continually think about what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, where I'm going to do it, and just moving forward smartly. You know? Anyways, I was going to start talking about, like, the gun control thing. And I have opinions, but, like, I'm starting to see different sides of the story. I'm starting to see different perspectives. I think that's valuable and important. I can still disagree with those perspectives, but it doesn't make those perspectives wrong for the context of that individual having that point of view, right? My point of view is simple, like, don't infringe upon my rights because I'm an honest, you know, citizen, law-abiding citizen, responsible, and I enjoy guns to do certain things, right? I believe in self-defense or whatever. That's the context of my position. I have to understand that. And I don't want increased gun control that affects my ability to enjoy what I enjoy, right? But I recognize the potential, that the importance and the good that it could do, and would increase gun control help the world? Yeah. Like, is it a slippery slope to what's the next step? Like, that's a lot of defensive gun control, right? Is because, oh, well, if we start doing this now, then what's that going to lead to? And what's that going to lead to? And give an inch, take a mile. Give an inch, take a mile. And if we're always worried about progress and doing good with that mindset of give an inch, take a mile, we're going to always be in a negative place. There's always people that are going to try and take a mile. And there are always people that don't want to give an inch. And there's got to be a balance there somewhere, you know. But I don't know what I'm saying. Don't call it. I don't think that the right to bear arms is a God-given right per se, by the definitions of, or many definitions of what God is or isn't, or your beliefs there. Like, I don't believe that it's some inalienable right to be able to own a firearm. I think it should be a privilege to own a firearm. I think firearm is a... So what do I think? Let's go there. Like, I think everybody has a natural born right to defend themselves and defend their offspring. It's everywhere in nature. everywhere in nature, every animal, every species has the right, is it even a right? It has a natural born obligation to its own existence or an inclination to defend themselves, to protect themselves from harm, right? I get it. Harm, now we have to start defining what are the parameters of harm and what do we perceive as harm, you know, and we can't make sure, we got to make sure we don't water down what harm is. And it can get slippery and it can get gray, but like, what is it, bodily harm? Is it life, death, serious risk of injury? Is it, you know, rape? Is it steal my property? Is it hurt my feelings? Where do we draw that fine line, that crisp line of what harm is and what it isn't, right? I think that's important. And we have to understand, like, escalation of force and proportionality. So I think we're all born with natural inclinations for self-preservation and preservation of those around us that we love and care for, right? And with that, then, we have different tools and implements to use at our disposal that increase the level of lethality. So I don't necessarily believe that we have a right to firearms, because that's increased lethality. I think we have a responsibility that we must have. I think we have a responsibility that we need to uphold as the level of lethality of our tools and implements increase. I believe that. Right? And so, if you demonstrate that you don't have responsibility, then we should limit a certain level of lethality from people. I agree with that. That's what I believe. Whether you believe in it or not doesn't matter, but understanding why you believe what you believe is what's of import. You know, you look at dogs, big giant dog, little dog, little dog's fucking around trying to grab the chew toy of the big dog. That big dog knows it doesn't have to eat and kill the little dog. It just knows that it has to scare it, maybe bite it, harm it in a way so that it stops the behavior that's encroaching on the big dog, right? The slighted. And I think naturally animals kind of know that for the most part, yet there's other animals that are higher up on the scale of apex type animals that have greater assets for lethality, and that's why they survive, and that's why they're at the top of the table for their chains, I suppose, right? And some animals are much less discriminate about the force that they wield. But we as human beings should be, because we're conscious, well, I guess all animals are conscious maybe, right? We have a conscience, we have a sense of something. We're a little bit more sophisticated with intelligence and processing and critical thought and reason. We should have an increased responsibility to know what level of lethality we need to use, right? But anyways, yeah, I don't know if owning a firearm is a natural born right. Like, a natural born right is the opportunity to defend yourself and those that you love, self-preservation. And if we allow everybody to exercise that, but then, you know, then discernment, right? So it's then it comes down to human beings and their different lots in life and their different upbringings, their different raisings, their different experiences, intellectual capacities, emotional capacities, capacities for good versus evil. And or I think everybody has a capacity for good and evil, and how life develops and nurtures those two different capacities is important to understand. I have a great capacity for evil. I know that. And that was nurtured for a while in the military. And you might not call it evil, but like, we're just calling it evil, right? I get it. We can argue whether it was evil or not, but like, to do great harm and disgusting things, right? But it was nurtured because it was part of the job and necessity. And then now that I'm not in that position anymore, I need to spend time nurturing the great capacity for good and starve a little bit of that capacity rebuild. I'm not saying totally carve it out, because I want to maintain my lethality if ever I'm called to protect and defend and preserve myself and loved ones, right? And guns are great tools for that. But, you know, it's like, yeah, people say, oh, Tosh, do you carry? I'm like, no, I don't carry. I don't open carry. I'm not interested in open carry. I'm fine if people do. I don't think it's not what I believe in. Why don't I believe in it? I just think open carry is inviting attention. If somebody wants to make an example or spark something, like I'm a magnet then for that individual, which is the exact, and so you're almost kind of licking your own ice cream cone in order to find yourself in those situations through the open carry. It's a great deterrent for sure, hard targeting, but I do also think it's a magnet. So no, I don't open carry. I don't even concealed carry. I'm gonna though, I'm gonna start. But I also understand the tremendous responsibility that comes with concealed carry, and then when you choose to unconceal your carry. But it's things I think about. I think about like this all the time. Why do I want to do something and why not? And then what is the responsibility? What is the burden that I have to assume given something that I choose? What is that called? I'm sure some psychologist has something that they would call that. You know, Jordan Peterson would call that something, and I don't know. That's what I believe. But how about this, man? How about quick transition? Something very, because I think this is where I started out wanting to go, was like, let's not make new rules. Let's not continue to make new rules, more imposing rules. Let's enforce the ones that we already have in place first. Oh, well, gun control is not working. Well, how do you know it's not working? How do we know that current gun control is not working if we aren't imposing the rules that we've already set to a standard, to a degree of fidelity that we're espousing? So instead, oh, it's not working, let's make new rules. New rules to do what? To not enforce those? To enforce those to a lesser standard than we communicate them to be? And then when those don't work, like, it's just a repeating pattern. Like, it doesn't take a scientist, you know, any idiot can see, like, okay, impose a rule, and then when that rule is not being followed because it's not being enforced, and then we make a new rule, what's a reasonable expectation is that next rule is not going to be enforced or followed. You know, it's a lack of standards and commitment to enforcement of set of rules. Hey, don't make rules. Don't make rules you're not willing to enforce, that you're not willing to stick to a standard to. Otherwise, it's bullshit. Otherwise, then we open up the conversation of entitlement and privilege and this and that and circumstance. And let's get out of guns. Let's talk about, I'm a big fan of United Airlines. I wasn't for a long time. Then I became a big fan, and now I'm becoming less of a fan because of politics, but whatever. Carry-on baggage. They got the little thing right before you, you know, at the gate, right before you go down the walkway, and you got the little size of your carry-on bag needs to fit in this. And it's the rule. Not to follow that rule infringes upon somebody else's privilege to exercise an advantage or whatever that we're all agreeing on, that everybody should be able to have this carry-on bag. Right, but somebody wants to bring a bigger one. Somebody wants to do this. Somebody wants to do that. And so, but they don't enforce that rule. You look at that little thing where you're supposed to fit your carry-on bag inside of that thing. You're allowed one carry-on and one personal item, or two carry-ons and one personal item, whatever it is that they say, and your carry-ons need to fit inside that little metal cage that they have at the gate. Right. I rarely see anybody with those. And you know what? Like, I'll call myself out. Me too. Right? Me too. I really follow it, because then that's not enforced. And I want to bring my shit. And me bringing my shit's more important than you having the opportunity to be able to bring your shit. Because I pay extra money to fly first class or whatever, and I get on first, and I know I'm not going to get called out. I care more about my shit and my convenience, my privilege, than I do about the person that's flying is like the last one to board, who then says, no, you have to check that. There's no more overhead space. That's not cool. So whittle it all back. If they set the rule of that being the carry-out, then enforce that rule. But instead, they make a new rule. Right? They make a new rule. Well, okay, cool. If you're boarding group five, you're not only allowed one carry-on. Right? They make a new rule. And they just keep making new rules. And that's one that I, you know, because I travel so often, I used to. I'm fortunate not to have to travel quite as much anymore. I kind of miss it, but don't. I see that. And I'm looking at that failure to enforce the rule, to insist upon the simple standard that we are willing to spend all the time and the energy to make, communicate, set, you know, all the infrastructure and the support mechanisms to communicate that this is our rule and this is our standard, but then we lack the ability to enforce it. We lack the drive, we lack the fortitude, we lack the earnest effort. And even then, so on the other side, when somebody does try to enforce it, I get upset. Oh, it's bullshit. Yeah, my bag will fit, like, right? And so it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I think about that in my life. Stop making rules. Stop making hard, fast rules if you're not willing to stick to them and enforce them. Let's take it another further. Let's stop making contracts with myself that I'm going to do something if I'm not willing to do it all the time. Hey, I'm going to make my bed every day. I'm gonna do that. My New Year's resolution, right? You know how I feel about those. I'm gonna do this, but if I don't do it, then why did I even make the rule? Like, because I'm optimistic. I'm thinking like, all I did was reinforce that failing to uphold your standard is okay. And if I fail to uphold the standard of a contract that I'm brokering with myself in one dimension, what am I communicating directly, indirectly, you know, about other standards in my life that I'm willing to stick to? And then what determines which standards are ones that I'm going to and which ones that I'm not going to? You know what I mean? I'm not going to lie, cheat, or steal. I'm going to make my bed. I'm going to work out every day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And when I don't make my bed every day, what does that imply for all those other things that I'm saying that I'm going to do or not do? That it's up for discussion. It's situational. No, bullshit, man. And I think that's a huge part of being, you know, the four agreements, being impeccable with your word. That's really what that is. Be impeccable with your word. I think about all our government and all these rules that we have. And we got all these rules in place. The conversation is not whether the rules are fair or just or appropriate across all people or not. That's not the conversation. The conversation is that we do have rules in place. Now, how can you say that the rules or the system is broken if you've never enforced them or stuck to them or kept them, and you're always making concessions for why this person doesn't have to follow the rule? No wonder we have chaos. No wonder we have all this bullshit going on. Don't make the fucking rules. Don't make the rules. What do we have? What rules do we have? And I think as a society, as a population gets bigger and bigger and bigger, it's harder for steadfast rules to apply blanket for all. I get that. But let's not use that as the starting point for the conversation. Let's go back to the very beginning in the essence and start the conversation there, and then follow the trail until it starts to devolve, and then come up with a solution at that point of dissolution, right? Like, let's not just dismiss it altogether. Let's get back to the origins. Follow, set a rule, enforce it. A rule is a rule because a group of people have agreed to it, and it's common, and it's commonly agreed. And now we're going to do that rule, and we're all going to enforce it. And it's not going to be easy to enforce at times. It's not going to seem fair at times. It's going to hurt. It's going to make you feel sad. You know that it's like, oh man, I wish I could break that rule. I wish I could not, like, for you, but I have to hold you to that standard. Sorry. It's a function of being consistent in life and happiness through consistency, happiness through discipline, happiness through shared common agreement that we're all going to give up a little of something so that we can all have a lot of something. That's what is society. That's what, and I just think about that all the time, whether it's in, yeah, I see it all the time outward, right? I'm focusing, I'm pointing outward at everything to identify something, but I'm not harboring on that. I'm looking at it back at myself and trying to internalize it to see where it applies to me and my life and my little scope and sphere. And I'm not perfect at it, but I'm trying, you know, efforts there. So, I don't know. I was thinking about that this week too. What other random shit but I'm thinking about this week? Random shit. Chris Smith getting some neck surgery. Everybody give him a shout out. Text him or email him or just, you know, send some positive mojo. Going to get some neck vertebra fused and discs replaced and some shit. Like, that's spooky to me. But he needs it, and I'm wishing him the greatest. You know, love that guy. So hopefully he comes through that well. He will. He'll be fine. Or he won't. But I love him. I'm wishing for the best, man. It says it's fairly common routine procedure nowadays. So, and things involving neck and spine and back, like, spook me. But whatever. All right, man. I'm gonna hang this, and then good old Connor Warman, Space Cadet, Space Cowboy, coming up to do creative session for some book writing. Got to do that. Got to keep plugging forward. It's really hard to. It's hard for me. You sit and you have all these conversations and he's writing and taking notes and we're recording things and we're ideating and we're doing cool stuff. And then he writes some things down and he gives them to me. And then you start reading back your own shit. And it's like, I'm bored. I'm bored of reading this chapter already and editing it and refining it. Cause I have these conversations with myself all day long. I don't want to be reading about it again, you know? And I'm struggling with that, but we're pressing forward. I'm excited. I don't know what the timeline is for that yet, but it's been cool. It's been getting me to think about a lot of things. Other than that, man, big foundation, Big Fish Foundation's fundraiser coming up in June 18th. Let me talk about this for a second. We're doing a fundraiser this year again. Last year was our first fundraiser, and it was pretty awesome, pretty ripper. It brought in some good money, and that allowed us to do a lot of cool programs for 68 veterans. And I want to do more than that this year. I want to double the amount of veterans that we serve in 2021. So we got this other fundraiser. We learned some lessons from the last one. We've got some more traction. We've got some more interest and awareness that has been broadcast outward. So I think it's a reasonable expectation to do better. We've got Josh Bridges and James Hobart have committed to coming again this year. Diesel Mike coming back. I can't do anything without having Diesel Mike here. It's just so cool to see him where he's at today. I really enjoy him a ton. Brista Pants Mayfield, she's coming. Love her. She's just tenacious as all hell. Her husband's a douchebag, but it's okay. No, man, I love John. Their son's amazing. And I'm trying to put the thumb screws in Julie Fouché. If you know Julie, you got her email, her Instagram, you got her text messages, just like peer pressure the shit out of her to get her up here for this, right? I want her to be an athlete at this year's thing, and Dan Bailey also, right? So we've got that list of athletes. And we're going, so here, my first call to action, contact vets that you know, because we're going to bring 5 veterans up, 1 from each branch of service, and we're going to partner them up with these athletes on a rotational basis throughout 30 hours, and we're going to do an event, a physical event, and we're going to teach a bunch of things and do a bunch of things, and we're going to showcase teamwork, esprit, challenge, techniques to overcome, you know, mild adversity, right, and build camaraderie up here at this fundraiser. So what am I asking? Peer pressure Julie, peer pressure Dan, if you have the means to, and reach out to some veterans. Say, hey, Big Fish is getting ready to announce their fundraiser, and they're going to bring all expense paid trip up to Crooked Butterfly and spoil the shit out of you, but then make you work and represent your branch of service, right? In a little competition, give away a bunch of, going to give away some Echo bikes, going to give away some Concept 2s, some other packages. So even, and if you have something that you want to offer for giveaways, for swag or something, like get in touch with me. I'm super happy to bring that on board too. Looks like O2 Recovery. Love those guys. Earth Day coming up tomorrow. Big Earth Day push for those guys. They're going to be carbon neutral at the end of 2021, which is kind of cool. And they do aluminum can beverages, which that's kind of what our row is all about, is trying for ocean conservation and reducing the amount of single-use plastics that we use and that we're dependent upon these days. And so Mananalu Water, owned by Jason Momoa, O2 Recovery Drink, you know, they're big into that, like trying to get carbon neutral, trying to reduce, because I feel I'm grumpy. Like, I just started doing some research and getting some information, and it's like, yeah, we're all told that, oh, you know, drink out of these plastic bottles because they're recycled. No, they're not. You know, less than, right now the numbers that I'm getting is between 7 and 9%, but less than 7 or 9% of plastics, specifically single-use plastic bottles, are recycled. Otherwise, they just kind of get crunched up and sold to a foreign country and then thrown in the ocean. Think about that. We sell our shit to a foreign country because we probably even subsidize foreign countries to take our shit because they have less rules or ethical things in place to dispose of, right? All we're doing is we're outsourcing our dirty laundry, you know, because, okay, so we want to feel good about being a recyclable nation and being, you know, responsible to the environment and all this and all that. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually pay another country to take our shit so that they can throw it in the ocean. Right? Is that ugly or what? Who the fuck are we? America. Come on, man. It's just, let's dial back to what do we really freaking believe in? You know what I mean? So anyways, we're championing for that, but you know, we got a couple other people that are coming to the Big Fish Foundation, and we're also gonna do paid full expense paid trips for a handful of other veterans to come to be volunteers and support staff for the foundation. So the fundraiser is actually going to be a fundraiser, but it's more an event retreat type thing to bring a group of people together for something, a goal that's bigger and better than any individual. So look forward to that. Look out for it to be advertised. So anyways, all right, I babbled enough. I got to figure out a time to upload this. Nicole's downloading the internet again. She downloads that internet every day, but I'll try and get her. We talked about it. I'll try and get her on the podcast for next week, I think. Just trying to feel out how that looks for us. All right, man. Have a good day.